Welcome one, welcome all. Step right up, step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 132. This drink, I like it. Another is on its way. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at Portal Gaming 60. Portal Gaming Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, The Brant, and with me for this pre-Gen Con episode is...
Larry Plano.
Hey, Larry, you're usually on the post-convention episodes, but you're with me for a pre-convention episode this time.
I'm going to try pre and post this year.
That's right, yeah.
Double your trouble.
People will hear this one before Gen Con, and then boom, like hopefully Monday, Tuesday after we get home, I'll get the post-Gen Con one out. So, awesome. We're not going to talk much Gen Con on this episode, because there's so many people doing that. The other day I woke up and there were four podcasts that had Gen Con, you know, which anticipation, which I think is awesome. But I just feel like, hey, if there's a ton of people doing that, people can go there and watch videos and listen to all that. We will key in on trying to be one of the first to have a post-Gen Con episode, as we always do, which I think is more exciting because talking about anticipating games is one thing, but actually talking about playing them is a whole different...
Yeah, and I think for the, you know, audience at home, it's also exciting to do it in the car ride home because that adds its own level of excitement for us we're driving and following navigation and trying to do the podcast.
That's so, right, nice. All right, well, this episode, we're going to review a bunch of games, and then we're just going to go through our favorites from the first half of 2019. It's funny because it's more than halfway through the year. But in terms of releases, we're not even through half the releases of the year.
Correct.
Because you have Gen Con and Essen where, you know, there's definitely crossover. But between those two, there's 1,500 games that are going to be released. So plus whatever other people put out, you know, outside of those conventions. So sound good?
Sounds good. So we're starting with reviews of games.
Yeah, we're going to start with reviewing some games. So I'm going to start with Star Trek Frontiers.
Yes.
So you and I played Star Trek Frontiers. This is a reskin of Mage Knight by Vlada Zhivadl, and then Andrew Parks helped to do this reskin. It really is a direct reskin. I mean, most of the cards are similar and everything. They just put it into the Star Trek universe. Now, you tried to play Mage Knight at some point, or you never played Mage Knight?
Yes, solo, though.
Okay.
And fumbling through the rules myself, so little confusion, did a few things wrong.
Right. This was early on.
Early on,
when we were playing.
But now, having played this with you, I kind of see where my mistakes were with the other game. And I got to tell you, I love Star Trek, and I love looking for a good Star Trek game, and this hit it for me.
Like, yeah.
This game hit that for me.
Oh, I mean, it's so good. So really, it is Mage Knight, but it puts it into the Star Trek universe. I think it's a little more exciting for me. I'm not a Trekkie, so but it is like, ooh, I know these characters. I know these things. I know what's happening. So it's nice on that front. But just playing it reminded me of how much I love Mage Knight or this game. It's just so good. And then I turned around a couple days later and went and played it solo. and looking at trying to get that expansion because, man, it is so fun. It is both these games are well known for being mostly solo or two-player co-op. Anything beyond that, you're just there. I mean, I played my solo game and I set it up in the morning, say around 9 or 10, and I sporadically played throughout the day. And what did I text you at, like 9:30 at night with my final score? So obviously that's with kids in the house and doing activities and whatnot, but I was sitting her down for 15 minutes at a time. But what I love about this game is this is one of those games that's asking you to take your time.
Correct.
Think out all your possibilities. What would happen, you know? The random draws are so few, it's really just the tokens. What am I going to have to fight? And even that, there's a chart on the back that shows you, here's all the possible things you could fight. It's, you know, tokens are only 10 high, 8 high, so.
Yeah. But for me, being a Star Trek fan, you know, I don't put as much thought into it, and I don't look at, because for me it's kind of like the show, like we don't know what we're going to encounter, right? Like, it's just here we go, and ooh, it was, you know, someone from the Dominion that we didn't expect, and I didn't have the proper, you know, what was it, diplomacy and attack you needed on away missions, you know, so then you just try to stack it before you go. But that was kind of neat to see that. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it did a good job.
The other thing that's really good with this game, so first off, I don't think competitive is great. It's fine if you just want to go and compete and see who gets the most points, but it doesn't work well with, like, all the PvP. I'm not a fan of that. But what I really like is it does have a final this is your score, but it also has an objective to end the game to get to your score. So you need to blow up the Borg cubes.
Right.
So in solo play, it's 2, and then with, like, co-op, you can get up to 4 cubes that you have to go. So if you do that, you won. Then you can tally your score. And the more you play, if you really start to master it, then you can up the difficulty of those if you just want to make that it. Or you can keep the difficulty and see how many points you score.
Right.
So it's got kind of both ends, which is really, like, games don't even do that now with all the solo play that we have. So, you know, whatever this game was, 2011, 2012 had that.
If you think to the Marvel Legendary deck builder, it gives you that kind of, like, we're not really playing it competitively. We're going to win. We're trying to win as a group, but then who got the best score?
Yeah.
It gives you, then you can adjust the difficulty, so it gives you that feel.
Nice. Cool. Why don't you give us a game that you want to describe off of?
I'm going to pronounce it terribly, but I think it's Inuit.
Yeah.
And I was taken by that game, by the artwork on the cover of the box. And I said, oh, it looks cool. Let me check it out. And then it said, okay, it's a card game. I'll, you know. And it's really somewhat different than some games I've played where you start with a board of Inuit that are printed on your board. And they're, you know, village elder, a trapper, a seal trapper, a beer hunter, a orca whale hunter, a shaman, a warrior, a scout. I might be missing one in there, right? Yeah. And then, and I have a color tribe. I'm blue, you're yellow, whatever the colors are. And then as you draft from the middle, from the great white cards, you decide where you're going to put these children and adults. Do I want more elders so I can get more children and adults? Do I want more warriors? Do I want, you know, whatever? Or, you know, do I want to capture a bear? Do I want to, you know, get a whale? Do I want to get a seal? Or do my shaman want to get, you know, some other elements like rites and spirits and things? But what's really neat about it is if my color's not out there, I could draft your color people. Okay. That's probably not the right term, but your tribe's people. And it's negative points for me and still positive points for you. But later in the game, I could try to flip them into weapons so that they don't count negatively for me. So that, it's a really, everyone I've taught it to has really liked it. It plays, I want to say, 25, 35 minutes. It's not terribly long. The scores have been quite varied depending on if people, what I call hate draft. Like if they decide to try to, you know, oh, I see Brain has two tribes people out there. I'm going to draft them so he doesn't get them and turn them into weapons or, you know, whatever. So, but I think I've played it 5 times now. Really good. I think so far this year it might be in my top 10 of the year, only because it's there's only so many, there's not that many new releases, but I've played it enough times that I've really enjoyed it. And I think you've played it once?
I played it twice now.
Oh, twice.
Yeah, I just played last night, actually, with Kathy. Cool. And, yeah, I mean, the art is definitely, like, one of the selling points for the game. It's gorgeous. Yeah. And I knew that would draw Kathy in. The simple gameplay is nice, like we're playing a game later at night. Hey, can we pick one? Let's try this. That was good. I wanted to mention, I actually tweeted this out on Twitter, but there's a whole page that Board and Dice did, because Board and Dice is the publisher, about how if you're going to, you know, do a game about a culture that's not your own, make sure you go figure out about it. And they had a person who knew Inuit culture, who did research, and they used actual tribe names and everything. I mean, who knows if they really got everything perfectly accurate, but at least they did the research to do it, which has been a big thing. So rather than kind of complaining about the places where companies don't do that, I just want to praise a company for doing that. Have you played this two-player?
I have.
We played two-player. I removed the conflicts.
Right, because they say to kind of do that in two-player.
Okay. The legendary cards that are like you lose 4 points unless you have the most, you gain 8, they felt really irrelevant.
In the two-player game,
because it was like, oh, by the time I get 5 bears and I have the bear thing, why is Kathy even going to go after bears? So I'm just going to get the 8 points or I'll wait to draft that. So it was really, like, it literally ended up, I had three of them and Kathy had three of them. Like, right. It just didn't really matter.
And you guys also play nice-nice, too, because, like, if you and I were playing and you took the bear legendary, I might start drafting bears so you didn't get them, but that's a different style. I don't know that.
It could work. In a heads-up two-player game, like, if this, much more, I'm totally about that, but this game just didn't feel like it had that element.
I think those expansion pieces are more 3-4 player.
Yeah.
I think that's where that comes in.
Yeah. And it was a little bit long. Like, I was scouting for 6 a turn, so we were putting 7 cards out there. And it still took us a while to get through that deck with 2 players. Like, I mean, not super long, but you said 25, 30 minutes, and it was 45, 50 minutes with us, like, pulling cards out. But it was fine. It was good. It is weird to me at the end of the game, there's a ton of cards in the Great White. And it just ends. There's no, like, play until those cards. The problem is if you did play it out, like, play till all those cards are gone, it would get super tight at the end.
Right. Now, did you play with the nice the sunsets and all that
stuff?
Yeah,
all that stuff is fun. Although, similar thing, like, the last one was draw 3 cards and take any game into your hand. And it was already, like, a deck that was very thin, so it was
speed
just
up the end of
not
the
getting
game.
Us much there. But it was fine, you know, it was good in terms of all that. So I definitely enjoyed it, like... It's definitely in that vein of, oh, it was fun to just have cards and play and relax in our house and, you know, we're just hanging out, the two of us. Like, it was just a very light game. It wasn't anything that we were looking to be overly strategic. Mm. So that was good. Cool. Let's see. You taught me Star Wars Outer Rim. So the big game, Fantasy Flight Games. This is kind of... focusing on the smugglers, the scum and villainy of the Star Wars universe. And it's really kind of a pick-up-and-deliver game, although the negative connotation that has, I feel like this game is so much less pick-up-and-deliver than, you know, it's kind of like happenstance. If I happen to be somewhere where I could get cargo that I could quickly deliver, then I'll do that. But I'm not, like, stuck.
It's almost like a hybrid between pick-up and deliver and, like, exploration.
Yeah.
Or, right? Like, not necessarily where you're exploring new tiles, like in some games, but the idea of almost everything you're looking for is hidden when it comes to bounties and people and things. So you kind of got to explore those tokens to see if they're who you're looking for while pick up and deliver still mixed in there with goods. Or when you get a bounty, you can kill them for an immediate reward or...
Capture
and bring back, a la pick up and deliver for a slightly better reward. And I think 9 times out of 10, you chose to kill instead of capture.
Yeah, so I mean, the structure of this game is very simple. A turn. It's just, you know, on my turn, I can choose an action, which is either like get credits or heal myself and my ship, or I can move. And the ship has movement, and I move to a space. And then I can purchase a card. There's a whole bunch of decks. There's gear, and there's new ships, and there's bounties, and there's all sorts of other things. And I can pick up one of those cards that may have a cost, like a bounty doesn't have a cost, or, you know, buy an upgrade for my ship, whatever it is. And then I draw a card and have an event happen, or I look at a token and I interact with Leia or Greedo or whoever it might be. And that's basically it. And you're just kind of repeating the turns.
And I think, I mean, there's two pieces to this. One, from a Star Wars standpoint, you know, many of us are Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives you a different Star Wars game. It's kind of a simplified version of Firefly, if anyone had played Firefly, you know. But I think its replayability is probably, it needs some expansions. Because after, you know, you interact with, you know,
Leia.
Twice, you kind of know Leia, right? Now, some cards they have different numbers. So there's a deck of cards numbered 1 to 90-something, but they're not 90-something cards. There's gaps in the 60s, 70s, 80s. So it looks like they've already built expansions into the numbers. Why they chose gaps, I don't know. But I think once you get more cards and expansions and you have multiple options, so when it says, oh, you flip this over, go to get card 28, and there's 5 28s, now you have some variability, whereas right now you go to card 28 and you kind of, oh, I've had that card 3 times in the last 5 games. I kind of know what I'm in for, kind of deal. So, but for me, it's a good Star Wars game. Like, it's a chance to get Star Wars on the table. I am a little anal. I didn't throw the cardboard standees away, but I did replace them all with Imperial Assault models.
Nice.
So when I play now, Han Solo is Han Solo, not a cardboard standee of Han Solo. So, you know, that to me is an easy fix. Most people probably have one of the Star Wars miniature type games or, you know, have some access to kind of upgrade a little bit. So,
yeah, so I mean, the big question would be like, is this Star Wars in a box? And I think the answer is no. But I don't think it's trying to be. I still think that's Rebellion. If you're a miniatures person, it could be Legion or maybe Imperial Assault. I mean, the thing with Imperial Assault is you don't run across as many of the main characters. I guess they have a lot more of them now.
This is more like Star Wars side story in a box, right? Like,
exactly.
It's like, hey, I'm going to play a smuggler or a bounty hunter or someone else and go do things in the Outer Rim, right? It's called Star Wars Outer Rim. It's not, you know, you have four different NPC faction ships flying around that you have reputation with that may or may not, you know, detract from you if your reputation's bad. They have the Empire, they have the Rebellion, they have the Scum and Villain, and then the Syndicate.
Yeah,
so that's giving you the big Star Wars there, like, oh, the Rebels were trying to this, so my Rebel faction is better. But it's not any kind of game of Empire versus, you know, Rebels, or I'm trying to save, you know, this planet, or I'm trying to win against the Emperor. There's nothing like that. It's just, it's a game themed somewhere in the Star Wars universe with some familiar characters, but nothing to do with the overall Star Wars, you know, typical genre theme. So
I do, for me, I feel like it's important that it is Star Wars, though. Because as I explore planets and it's like, oh, there's that character, how generic they are, Garandin, you know, is the example I always come up with. I know that character. And so it's exciting to me, whereas if I didn't know Star Wars or it was generic, it would probably not be a game I would play.
Right.
Because it would be kind of basic. And that's not to take away from the mechanisms and say like, oh, you only like it because it's Star Wars? Kind of, yes.
Right.
Like, the game is fun inherently, but it's just kind of wash, rinse, repeat. But because of the Star Wars, it's fun to see the different things I run into. So.
And actually, I could lead, if you don't mind. It's not on our list, but I have played it recently, and I don't think you've learned it yet. But in the same vein, Batman Talisman.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so they've streamlined some of the Talisman rules that, for me, bogged Talisman down. They shortened the game. The inner ring that used to be, like, terribly just difficult and just pain-crushing is actually is much easier in Batman. And again, it's a game I probably wouldn't play if it wasn't Batman.
Yeah.
And again, you're not playing as Batman. Batman is actually the person going around attacking you. You're playing as a different villain in Arkham, trying to basically cut power to Arkham so everyone can escape. And that was like the inner ring. So in the same vein, another game like Star Wars Outer Rim, if you like that Batman and the villains of Batman, you know, Batman Talisman's a good game to get that theme. But again, you're not playing a superhero with a story arc that you're trying to, you know, like typical. It's just, hey, we're in Arkham Asylum playing a Talisman type game with Batman. So I'd put it, those two games for me are kind of, I play either for the theme, and I wouldn't choose one over the other, essentially.
Right.
So
yeah, you wouldn't play Talisman itself, but Batman Talisman.
Right.
I'm going to hold out for the Kingdom Hearts Talisman.
Right. And Outer Rim, if there was a non-Star Wars Outer Rim, I wouldn't be playing.
Yeah.
Right. So fair enough.
Cool. You want to pick one of these other ones?
One of these other ones. Oh, let's talk about Draftosaurus, because did I teach you that today, or did you know it already?
You taught it to me today.
I very rarely teach Brant games, so this is why I'm like, oh, I taught Brant a game, because I handed Brant
Most
a game.
Most people very rarely teach me a game.
I actually handed Brant a game today while we were playing Draftosaurus learn these rules so we could play Darwin's Choice after.
Yeah.
But anyways, Draftosaurus, small game box. I think I've timed my games as quick as 5 to 7 minutes and as long as 15 minutes. It's a drafting game where you're grabbing a pile of 6 dinosaurs. I think there's 6 different types of dinosaurs. They're identified by color, but you could look at the shape and you know what a T-Rex is, you know what, you know, a Stegodon is, whatever. And on one side of the board, there's one rule set for a dinosaur park game, and on the other side, there's a completely different. Which is great because you can kind of play two games back to back, get a different feel. And it's essentially, there's different places on the board, like play dinosaurs that are the same here for points, play dinosaurs in pairs here for points, etc. The two caveats are the board's broken down by two region types as well as two sides of the board.
and you roll a die, and the person who rolls the die always is free to place their dinosaur anywhere. Every other player is restricted by the die roll, which might say only place in an open pen, or only place in grass, or only place on the food side of the park. So that's where it gets a little difficult. And in the two-player variant, which is nice, instead of two rounds, you always place 12 dinosaurs. In the two-player variant, instead of two rounds, you play four, because you do the typical two-player draft one, throw one out. So you get three dinosaurs a turn for four turns instead of six for two. I think I've played it 10, 12 times already, and I got it like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. But I've taught it to like the kids. I've taught it to friends. Matt liked it a lot. Mike liked it a lot. People that, you know, typically are a little more difficult. Again, it's as lightweight as you can get. But it's asking your brain to kind of draft with some strategy and look at all your opponents and kind of know, you know, there's the same amount of colored dinosaurs in the game. And, you know, depending on what you've seen get drafted, you can kind of anticipate what's going to be short at the end or what's not going to be short and what you might want to keep. So what'd you think of it?
No, I really liked it. I mean, it kind of is like Sushi Go, right? It's just drafting. It's fun because the dinosaurs are meeples, and they're dinosaur meeples, so that's really exciting, you know, in terms of what's there. The point scoring is clever, just like Sushi Go has clever point scoring. So I feel like I could kind of do that. Like, I could teach a Sushi Go and play that with people, and then I could teach a Draftosaurus and play that, and I would feel like I had two different experiences, even though it's very similar to its approach. The die is definitely a clever addition, just to add just a little bit to mess with your plan beyond what we're drafting. I thought that was neat. That was like, oh, next turn, I'm going to go right here. Just make sure you give me, yes, I got a yellow. They roll, oh, I can't go there because, and now I have to think about what I'm doing. So, yeah, it was definitely more fun than I had anticipated.
Cool.
In terms of that, so. That was neat. I would like to play it with more, because I just played it with two. But we played both sides. It was good. There was two sides of the board.
It's definitely, I mean, it plays well too, but I think three and four is where it, you know, that's the regular game.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, next up we played Space Explorers. So Space Explorers is a new game, kind of in a small box, 25th century games. I guess it was actually designed in Russia. So it's about the space race, but it's really like the early space race. So you're trying to complete projects, you're trying to obtain worker, like scientists to join your team.
Technicians,
engineers, all kind of things. And then there's kind of overall projects, probes and satellites and spaceships.
And it's all cards.
And it's very akin to Splendor. That's what it gets compared to, because there's symbols on cards.
And that's where I disagree with everybody, but we'll go into that.
But it's the symbols on cards and trying to complete the project. So on your turn, you basically have two options. You can draft a card from the center and put it into your hand, or you can pay resources to be able to hire one of those cards to join your tableau.
Your hand or from the board.
Yep, from either spot. And when you kind of spend resources, you have these tokens and you share knowledge. So you pass the tokens to the player on your left. And then as you build your tableau, you may have symbols that you don't need the tokens anymore. It's kind of decreasing your cost. And then in addition, there's kind of these other project symbols that help you to get the projects. I can't remember any of the names. I'm usually good with the names, but whatever it is, to obtain those tokens. And the game ends when somebody gets to 12 cards or all the projects are completed.
And those projects are very similar to your Splendor,
gem dealers or something. Yeah.
Right. What I like, I mean, the two things I like about it, and I can't believe you didn't mention this first because you're the art freak, but I do think the game looks great. It's got that kind of old-fashioned, like it looks like an old game, right? It looks like it's been...
Like Food Chain Magnate.
Yeah, but with good art. Right, and but the interesting thing we discovered is I think there's five or six colors, or jobs. It's only five or six different pieces of art at different zoom frequency. So you're looking at the same picture from four different points of view. So it looks like there's a lot of different cool art, but it's really the same art, just a different segment of it, which that to me was cool. The piece that you mentioned that I think makes the game very unique, well, there's a few things. There's the special abilities on all the cards. Mm-hmm. Not all the cards, but many cards have special abilities at the bottom. Great player aid. Best I've seen in a long time as far as color coordinating and numbering, and you look at a card and you go, oh, it's pink and it's 47.
Yeah.
Here's what it does.
It versus looks, when you get the player, it looks like it's going to be super overwhelming. Like, all I'm going to do is spend the whole game reading this player aid. No, nope, you don't.
Best player aid, you know, I think I've ever seen. But what I really liked was that you mentioned the shifting the resources, sharing resources. It's very unique, but at the same time, in some games I've played at the end, it becomes, right, once someone has enough of an engine built, they don't need to spend resources, which means the resources don't move. And I've also seen at the beginning of the game people being scared to spend too many resources because they don't want to pass them
right
to the player. But I think that's so cool. It's such a neat concept. Like, I really want that card. And, of course, I could discard a card for bonus resources, which puts it back to the table for someone else to take. But the idea of I'm going to spend these four resources and now Brant has four more resources to spend, like, that really, to me, added a lot to it. So no, I really liked it.
The abilities on the cards is a big deal.
Right.
They're really part of making your engine. Not only can I make things cheaper, but what can I do with what I have on the cards?
And to me, that's where it just differs so much from Splendor for me, was those character abilities, those card abilities, and triggering and keeping them on top, because once they're covered, they're gone. Right? So that was also a little trick. Like, I have this really cool card, but if I play it early, I might cover it up. So I think I've played it four times now. I really like it.
Yeah, I think I'm at four plays, and I really enjoy it. I'm really excited to have one play where everybody knows the game. Because you know me, I take a game and I enjoy it, and then I teach it to this group, and then I teach it to this group, and then it starts to burn out a little bit, like answering the same questions. I got there with Wingspan. I no longer want to teach a five-player game of Wings. I just can't do it.
And you don't want to answer that same question.
I can't answer the same question. Like, I want to have the patience, but I'm just at the point where I want to just enjoy it. Like, I played two-player Wingspan with Kathy like a month ago. Oh, it was so enjoyable. It was like 25, 30 minutes, no questions asked. We just played the game. It was beautiful. It was so fun, and I don't always get that experience, which is cool. You're getting it a lot when you're talking about playing this game four or five times, Draftosaurus, Outer Rim. You're playing these games with people over and over, and you're getting that experience. I don't always have that because I'm trying to push new games, and I'm trying to push new games on people because I can teach. So I'll teach you for the first time and have to answer those questions. So I really don't mind. I don't want to make it sound like I don't like doing that, but it's like, it is nice to have that experience. It's like, oh, I'm just enjoying this game now.
Well, and that's when you know you really like a game, when you get to the point where you've learned it, you've ruffled through the rules three times, maybe made a couple mistakes, which we're known to do. But then you get to the point where we know the rules, we don't have to look through the rule book, we can play it and have fun. And I look forward to that with a few games on my top 10 for this year that I'm not there yet with, because the rules are...
Well, don't get too excited, because we're a couple days away from going to Gen Con.
Which is all going to be new games.
All new games with all the wrong rules.
Yes.
Maybe no table flips this year, but I was really close to a table flip last year. So we'll see where that goes. All right, why don't you tell us this last game here.
Oh, HP. Harry Potter Defense Against the Dark. Let me tell you, this game is awesome. It's when you really showed good. It to me, I'm like, this is going to be terrible. I got to be honest. Because I wasn't a huge fan of the deck builder.
Yeah.
Not that it's bad. I mean, a lot of people like it. It's Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter. I think you said this when you first learned about it or played it. It was like the first four games are like we could throw out because we're veteran gamers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
And I never got past that.
Right. The sixth and seventh games are phenomenal.
I never got there, and I think I lent it out to someone. So when I saw this, I'm like, all right, I'll try it out. It's awesome. Like, it just played, and it's so swingy.
Let's be careful that you jumped from one game to another.
Right, so we're talking about Harry Potter, Defense Against the Dark Arts, the duel, the two-person duel. So a game I had with my daughter, she just started crippling. Now, I won I stunned her first. But I already knew her engine was better than mine, but I got an early stun just the way the cards fell. But she cursed me, or hexed me so much. I literally, there should be a rule in the game that if you draw a hand of only hexes, you lose. Right? Because I did that. I literally drew a hand of hexes and was like, I did nothing I could do this turn. But it's very, if you've watched Harry Potter, I want to say it's Harry Potter in the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah,
when him and Malfoy get asked in class to duel each other. So the game literally has a long purple cardboard strip that acts as that kind of dual platform.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have spaces. And basically, I want to say there's 7 or 8 spaces. So if you take 7 or 8 damage, you get knocked back to a stun. And then you reset, you pick up all your cards, shuffle your decks.
That's cool.
Play again. Yeah. So you play best of 3. And I want to say, I mean, once you
best
know
of 5. Best of 5.
Oh, did we just do best of 3?
No,
4?
We played best of
5. Oh, you I'm sorry. You get to 3. I'm saying it wrong, which is best of 5. Correct. You got to win 3 times. But I want to say, once you know the game, 25, 30 minutes to get
to
that?
Yeah, it's a matter of reading your cards and what
you
comes
know,
out.
But really cool things, like if I'm playing a Slytherin character, all Slytherin spells have a thing at the bottom. If I'm Slytherin, there's a bonus. Now, if I get an ally that's Slytherin and I'm Gryffindor, I now can play Gryffindor and Slytherin cards.
That's a huge
rule
in the game.
And it's just, it's really good. And there's very few. I haven't noticed many cards that, like, oh, Brant, lose everything. Like, it's very much what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And doing damage to you
and
hexing you. But nothing like, if you get an ally out, you have an ally out.
Right.
If you get, right, like, and it might say do extra damage for every ally you have or heal extra. But I really thought it was well done. It gave me that sense of every spell. Oh, here's an interesting point, which I don't know why I care about this. But every spell card is a runic picture of the design pattern that the wand draws to cast the spell.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that's just, as a Harry Potter fan, that's cool. Like, my daughter loves Harry Potter. And as we're playing, she's like, oh, look, Alohomora. And it's, this sim. So if you're into Harry Potter, I think this game's, for me, the best Harry Potter game I've seen out there.
Yeah, I think you pretty much said everything that I would say. The one thing that I would reiterate, which I think you had in there, though, was if you kind of were ho-hum on the Harry Potter deck builder, it's worth it to try this one to see if this is where it is. Probably the only hang-up I can find for people is that it is two-player only.
Right.
Right? So I could see that being a kind of an issue for people. Cool, that's a whole bunch of reviews. So there you go, everybody. What did we just review? Like 7 games?
can I throw one more in there?
Let's do it.
Is that okay?
Uh-huh.
Only because I don't know if you've played it, and if you haven't, you need to, is Tukey. Have you played Tukey yet?
No, I didn't even know. Is it out?
Yes.
Oh.
I'll bring it next time to teach you. So it is a dexterity game in terms of your building, but it's kind of a mental speed game where you have 4 colored, 4 cube sticks. So they're, 4 inches long, and they're like 4 cubes, and you flip a card, you roll a die. The die will tell you a different shape, and that's the orientation you put the card in.
Okay.
So every card has 3 possible variations of how it's going to play, and you have snow cubes. So when you roll the die, it will tell you if your base needs to start on snow or not on snow. And the snow is basically invisible. So you're just looking at they only show you a pattern of the 4 colored sticks. And you got to build that using the snow to either counterbalance or support underneath and get the shape. It's not the first person to get it that wins. It's the last person that loses. So what happens is, if there's a 3-player game, the last person to figure it out collects the card. First player to collect 5 cards loses. And the game ends, and whoever has the least amount of cards wins. So that's neat. But what's really neat is it's a 4-player game, and there's only enough components for 3 players. So, and that, it took us a second. We're like, wait, this makes no sense. So then we played it 4 players. What happens is the person who loses sits out a round and is the judge. So they don't collect 5 cards in a row if they're really terrible, right? So I lost that round. I pass my cubes to another person. I flip the card, roll the die, whatever. I judge if you did it right. Now you lost that round. You're the new judge. I get the cubes. Now I'm, so if you're playing with someone who's terrible, it's not going to be 5 and out.
Right.
And everyone, so now at least there won't be those 0-0-0 ties. Yeah. Right? Which was kind of interesting. Like, at first we weren't sure that made sense, but once we did it, the game goes so quick. It wasn't like you were sitting out for 5 minutes. You were sitting out for 45 seconds while someone, other people built their thing. But I'll show it to you. It's a lot of fun. The only person who hasn't liked it, oddly enough, was Jen Bartlett, who loves dexterity building games. And Matt said it was because it was too hard. Like, he said she had a hard time figuring out and I had to play it a few times, and actually Ron Lacer was the first person I saw to use counterbalance. So instead of supporting one that was horizontally out, he just counterbalanced snow on top of the end of it to keep it from falling over. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. So, like, as you learn strategies in this game, you kind of learn quicker ways to build the patterns. But it's a lot of fun. It gives you that junk art feel quicker with less chaos.
So there you go. That's
Tukey.
Eight games review.
Yeah, eight games.
Nice. And Tukey is Plan B games. We should mention that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. All right. So what we're going to do here now is we're just going to go through. I kind of like to focus. People are always like, oh, I've heard a lot of like, 2019, there really hasn't been a big game. There hasn't been an amazing game. And I tend to generally agree. Like, there hasn't been that, like, standout, amazing, stellar game this year. But there's been so many really, really good games. This brings me back a couple episodes ago. I was talking about, like, going to Dice Tower Con and playing Reavers of Midgard. And I love Champions of Midgard. It's one of my favorite games. People are like, well, how does Reavers compare to Champions? Well, it's really good. It's not as good as Champions, but that's okay. Like, right. Every game doesn't need to be better than the last game I play. Right. Now, that's great when it is, and I can see where people are excited about that. But you know what? It was really good, and that's I have a whole bunch. So I just wanted to kind of highlight the games from the first half of the year that I think so far have made this a really good year of gaming. If I only had these games to play from this year, I'd be perfectly happy, even though I don't think there is a game that's like, this is going to be one of my top 10 games of all time. I don't think there is one of those this year, but there's a lot of really good games. So
there's some contenders, probably.
Cool. So I'm going to go through mine, and then you're going to agree or disagree, and then add some of your own.
Sounds good.
Perfect.
When do you want me to agree or disagree? When you say the
as
game?
As we go.
Okay,
yeah, as we go. So I'm just going to put my favorite game out there, because everybody knows I've pushed this game so hard.
Did I teach you this game?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
You or did
got
I
me
push
to buy
it? Okay,
I
got you to buy it, but I didn't teach you. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
What is
fair.
It?
Fleet the Dice.
Yes, everybody knows. So I have now taught this to a ton of Dice Tower people. I think I linked you the Steph Hodge blog from BGG. Yeah. She works for BGG and does stuff. Got to play with her, which was awesome. And I just can't wait. I've already got two games scheduled to teach at Gen Con.
I think it's amazing. I have one complaint about the game. I think it's so good, and I think this has affected you, and you might not realize it. I think it's so good, it makes every other Roll'n'Write seem so bad that like someone like you are like, Roll'n'Write's, other than Fleet. But there are some really good Roll'n'Write's that have come out that I really enjoy, but Fleet is so...
Right?
Like, so that's my only complaint, that it's diminishing all the other Roll'n'Write's
out there.
Well,
my argument would almost be if this had come out five or six years ago when Roll'n'Write wasn't even a thing, nobody would even call it a Roll'n'Write game.
Right.
It would just be, oh, you roll and you it's a dice drafting game.
Right.
Oh, and then you mark everything on a piece of paper. Like, there's no doubt it's Roll'n'Write. I'm not trying to fight that. But it's just so different from just like, oh, there's a little puzzle and an abstract thing you have to understand. It's not. It's very thematic, actually. Going fishing and I have to catch fish.
Yep.
And then I win the game. Wingspan.
Oh, that might make it into your top 10 of all time.
I don't think it would for me.
Really?
Oh,
I thought you really liked Wingspan.
Yeah, I do. Well, yeah, anyway. So then Unmatched, which is the new game from Restoration Games, which I know the verdict is still out for you. You've played Epic Duels.
Which I love.
So you're like, oh, it'll just be the same as Epic Duels. And I'm like, yeah, I want you to play it. Because I think for some people, when you drop Star Wars, they could... That could drop off for them. Like, whoa, it's not Star Wars anymore?
Right, but Unmatched is giving you also, I mean, very cool potential IP, right? If I understand, Bruce Lee's one of them.
Bruce Lee.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Okay, I know I'm older. I know I'm older than some of the people that might be listening to this, but I grew up, Bruce Lee was the... I mean, I bought nunchucks and almost killed myself because of Bruce Lee. So, you know, I'm excited. Tell me this. Is it at least as good mechanically as the original game?
It's better, hands down.
Well, then I can't wait for it. That will probably be my one or two must-buys at Gen Con if they're
so
selling
good.
It there.
It's so good. All I've done is say how good it is and tell everybody
good.
That it's so good.
Now,
so.
Let me ask you a question, because you have some knowledge. You know, you've talked to the guys. Is Star Wars out of the question coming back to Unmatched, or is it just that they wanted to start far away from Epic Duels?
Yeah, it's out of the question because FFG holds the license for Star Wars board games.
Okay.
So somehow they'd have to create a separate thing to get that IP, and I just don't
They'd have
think
to do like
happen.
Marvel and Sony with Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't think Fantasy Flight's going to give that up, given the amount of money that they pay to have the Star Wars license. So there's that. They did announce Jurassic Park. So one of the expansions, which will not be at Gen Con, but is coming out, is InGen vs. Raptors.
So what right now are the choices? You have Bruce Lee.
Yep. So Bruce Lee is a standalone conventions and online only, so it's not in retail.
Okay.
And then there's a four-player box, which is King Arthur, Alice, but it's like badass Alice, Sinbad and Medusa. So that's someone in that box, which it can be a four-player, a three- and four-player game. I still think it's going to be best at two,
right,
but
yeah.
I would throw down a four-player game. I mean,
because I think Epic Duels went up to six people.
A 2v2 co-op could work perfectly well. Yeah. A three-player free-for-all or four, that might not be my favorite, you know. And then there's a two-player standalone box, which is Bigfoot and Robin Hood.
And where's Buffy in this? They're just announced it that
Buffy
it's
was announced
come.
And now seems to be back burner for when it's going to actually come out. I don't know if that's licensing. I don't know if that's design. I don't know if that's production. I'm not sure exactly. And then, so that's where that's at. And then, the other one. So I think those are like October, November releases for all that stuff. We're going to try to pick this up at Gen Con, although they're already announcing that like pre-orders sold out. So I don't know if they're going to then ship and fly in more. I'm hoping. But we'll have to see what they want to do. Pipeline is my next one from Capstone Games.
I don't think Capstone's made a game I don't like.
There you go. Yeah, Pipeline's really good. I kind of keep being up and down. Like, one game I do really well, and then I don't do well, and then I do well, and then I don't do well, which is kind of a mark. It definitely has a runaway leader, but you don't really care. It's not that long. It's like 75 minutes. Right. So it's not that big a deal.
It's interesting because it gives you that heavy Euro feel with some abstract, like, spatial awareness with the pipes, right, with lining up the pipes. And
right.
To me, the only downfall I had in that game was if you don't go after pipes early, you don't necessarily get – there's no mitigation for, man, I really need a couple of blue pipes, and I just can't get them.
They're
just not there because not all the markets are open at the beginning, right? Each round – so if you open a market and take a few out of it and you open the market that doesn't have what I need – so, but otherwise, I really enjoyed that game. I thought it was really neat.
Res Arcana from Sandbox Games and Tom Lehman.
Yeah, you like it more than I. It's not that I didn't like it. I'm not sure that I can replay that often. I feel like there's only, what is there, 8 big cards? And you play with 5 a game or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Yep.
But
so
I did
replayability
enjoy it.
Would be your main thing.
Game but it's an engine builder at the end of the day that's fun, which, by the way, I finally played Gizmos and loved it from an engine
builder. You hadn't played Gizmos yet?
No. I didn't play it until I went with Chris and those guys to.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, loved it. I actually bought it. So
nice. Oh, yeah, that was. Their copy was the one that made me never want to go. Sorry, I have no problem with having gotten them a copy, Chris and Aaron. Like, do it whatever to help them. Do not mind helping, but. Just that whole fiasco at Gen Con of trying to get a game as the hall's opening is just not a thing.
Difficult.
It's not something I want to ever be part of anymore. And I know that people just have to do that. Yeah. And we have the bonus of like being at a booth and being able to work and whatever, review copy, whatever. But I'm done. I just don't want to fight with people. You can have the game and I'll just wait.
Yeah.
I can't do
I'll
it.
I'll wait.
So here's two that I think if we get to play them at Gen Con will be very high on your list. I'm sure there's going to be an unknown that will be your game of the con, but you're going to love Hedara and Crown of Amara. Both of those were super good. I played them at Dice Tower Con, and they are really, really good. Hedara is a civilization drafting game, which obviously sounds like Seven Wonders, but they did it. They made a different formula that works. It's not Seven Wonders. It just has the same sound, right, when I describe it. It's kind of like how Clans of Caledonia sounds like Terra Mystica until you actually play it, and then you're like, it's not.
Right.
Crown of Amara is just that classic mid-light Euro. You know, mostly mid-weight, a little on the lighter end, but it's just two simple rondelles. And you can pick which rondelle you want to move around and then what action you want to take. Do I want to harvest resources or do I want to go to town where the rondelle is and spend the resources to get victory points? And that's it.
Wait
it's
a minute.
So
did I play...
Oh, Gamma?
Does this have a different name?
No.
Was I maybe playing a German version of it at Gamma?
Yeah.
So help me with
you
the resources.
You play cards each turn, and you can play like sets of three cards.
Can you become a prince or something, or like a...
Yes.
Okay, I think Brian and I play that, and I really like that game.
It's really good. It's just like...
Who's got that game?
Pegasus Spiel.
Yep. I think that is the one I played. Yes. But I don't think it was... I think it just had a different... I think they didn't have the English version.
Gotcha.
There.
Yeah, it's really good. Magnastorm,
great
I just...
Game.
I was so afraid with it being the designers of Gaia Project that I would just be a letdown. It was so good. It's so different. It's a race game. It's a race victory points game. And it's very, very good. And it's one of those games that people are just going to need to be convinced to play. Because when you look at it, there's nothing that's making you go, oh, I should play this. The best they did were those little turtle
right.
research station. Be like, oh, there's turtles. Okay, I'll try it if you're like a turtle fan.
You had your complaint before about you can't wait to play a game that everyone knows how to play. And to, and any heavy game is, you know, you need a second, third, fourth play to really. Yeah. But this game for me really fits that category of I want to sit down where everyone knows how to play and everyone's played it a few times. So that we can enjoy, because
really head to head.
Because there is some really interesting strategic decisions in that game. Different ways to race for those points,
right? And different back things. People up,
right? So it's really interesting. But again, the first time you play, like if you taught three new people and you were playing for real, you're gonna smoke them, right? It's not. Whereas other games you could teach and it's still gonna be a close game. This game does have a learning curve of strategy that. But I, that's in my top 10 of the year. So far.
Yeah.
And I think it will stay in my top 10.
I think
I'd be surprised if it didn't.
Yeah, I would love to bring this one to Gen Con and teach people. I just don't know about space-wise, bigger game, if I want to have it on me. But and it's like, it's one of those things where Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll play some people, then it'll be all new stuff, and you don't need that stuff anymore. So we'll see. Trying to get Eric Summer to play that game, because I think he'd really like it. Sorcerer. I really, really like Sorcerer. It has one major detracting factor why I don't own it. Do you know what it is?
Is it the theme and art?
Theme and art.
I don't know who will play this. But it's just,
oh yeah, it's great, but it's
but
so
it's
good.
It's demonic.
Gory.
It's all,
and,
right,
yeah. So it's like somebody has to look past that, and I don't know that Kathy will do that. Like, and to her benefit, it's always like, why should she have to? Why not just play another game, right? I mean, unless it was the greatest game of all time.
But I will say it's got some very unique aspects to
it's
it.
It's so good.
It's like, it's not Smash Up, but it is, right?
Right, right. It's like gamer Smash Up.
Right, exactly. It's like Smash Up where you're playing a game to win the location. And I'm not sure yet, because I've played it both ways, if it's better two or multiplayer. Because multiplayer does work better than you would think, and it adds some different elements. It's like you're fighting the person to your left and right.
Yeah, yeah.
In multiplayer. So it's a little different multiplayer. But you and I have played two-player now two or three times together, and it's been great.
It's so good. I love it. I love, it's just got those combos. And I didn't think I would like it has dice rolling, and I didn't think I would like the dice rolling. I love it.
Yeah.
Like, I love the dice rolling, and then it's like, you re-roll that. Now I'm going to re-roll this. Yeah, re-roll that one, too. Like, it's just
and
really
some people
good.
Have said that that's dragged the game, but every time I've played,
no,
that
makes
has.
Tense.
But that hasn't really dragged the game out. We haven't had that much re-rolling where it's been like, oh, we spent 10 extra minutes playing this game. Because it's not hard. It's like, oh, I want you to re-roll that crit.
Yeah.
Okay, you re-rolled it, and you decide, well, I'm going to... It hasn't
but
taken
it's still
away.
Because I'm trying to decide, and I got these tokens.
Well, the best
play?
Is when I say re-roll the crit, and you re-roll it, and it's a crit again. 1 out of 6, right? Like, but...
Cool. Die Tavernen und Tiefenthal. Cheers the board game, as I call it.
I love that game.
Which is
that
the new Wolfgang good. Warch. Yeah, you've been the most gung-ho I've seen.
Yeah, that was that game was
on
awesome.
This game. So this is the new Wolfgang Warch. It's coming from Northstar Games in November, so they'll be demoing it at Gen Con. But I will also be demoing it at Gen Con because I'm bringing it with me. I have two games of this setup as well already that people want to play. So it's cool that we have a copy from Dave Luza that he brought from Germany for us.
It's great. There's so many good things about that game. But the thing I like the most is the idea that there's cards that you draw cards until you fill the seats in your bar, right? So now you can figure out, do I want to get rid of all my crappy patrons so I fill the seats? And I have less patrons, so I get more of the other bonus cards that I'll just draw 20 cards and only fill 3 seats. And the fact that the board, your player board, is like in, I'm going to lie and say 20 pieces, but it's probably in 8 pieces. And you got a puzzle piece, your player board together, and then there's things that flip over if you spend the resources to flip them. I really like that. I can't wait for it to come out in English so I can read the rules. And own it myself, but nice. I for now will play your German copy.
Cool. Thunderstone, which was an older game, then they revamped Thunderstone Quest, and then this year they brought out the co-op version, which I think is the best way to play this game. I love the co-op version. It's the one complaint I would have is that it's too easy. We played one that was hard, and I think we still won, but now that I've played 2 or 3, they're easy. So we need to up that difficulty, which it does. It's like if you lose anything, which I actually think is going to be the best way to play. If any one section of town goes down, you lose.
Right.
Because now you have to alt your, oh, I'm going to build my deck well, to, nope, I can't build my deck. I got to put all my resources in defending town.
I love it. And you know, I never played Thunderstone before this.
Right.
So I played, you taught me the competitive game. Then I learned the co-op game. and then I told you the co-op game was good, and now.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I don't mind. The one thing I like about the competitive game that I miss in the co-op game is the unique nature of I'm choosing to go to town or the cave. And if I get the right cards, I could go to the town, then go to the cave. Co-op, you go to the town and the cave, which is fine. You need that in co-op, otherwise it wouldn't work. But that is the one thing in the competitive game that I really like, because that's a very interesting concept. It's not like any other deck builder I can think of where I have two choices. Like, am I going to do this? Or am I going to buy cards and do stuff? Or am I going to go fight to try to win the game? You know, get victory points, whatever. So I still like it competitively, but you're right. Co-op is... It's just so good co-op.
I like it competitively. It's just too long. Even with two players, it feels so long.
Yeah, where it's like searching for the keys.
Yeah, where I'm just going to jump and I'm going to play, you know, Heart of Crown. Like if I want a two-player deck builder, that's just, and competitive, that's just much better to me. But it is a different feel. It's a dungeon. No, it's a dungeon delve, you know, in a different way than even Clank.
I think, dare I say, it's the best cooperative deck builder I've played.
Are you going over Marvel Legendary?
I don't consider that co-op. I will say this. Thematically, Marvel Legendary will always win for me, but Thunderstone Quest is a better mechanical game. If they could make Thunderstone Quest Marvel or DC, and I will say one thing, because I don't know if you've played it, but Aeon's End, cooperatively, is also a very good deck builder.
So then my last two here, Empires of the North, which is the new Imperial Settlers coming out from Portal Games. I didn't realize ZRC gave us a 10 out of 10 on his rating, so I'm really excited to try to play that. I think that's something you and Brian could really latch on to. And I did enjoy it, but I played it at 1 o'clock in the morning at Dice Tower Con, so it was like, I played it, and I enjoyed it, and I remember enjoying it, but I couldn't process everything there.
And your last one might be my favorite game
of the year
so far.
I think it might be your favorite. Now, it's weird because it's retail releases this year, but the game goes back 2 years ago to when it's first Kickstarter. But that's Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. And it's really, really fun.
Really, really fun. It's really, really overproduced.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
And just to add, game you've played, Tales of Glory.
Yeah.
By Ankama, which I have not played a game of theirs I haven't enjoyed yet, because I played Monster Slaughter, which is a great...
Yeah, I want to try that.
...fun-themed game. And I've played, what else did they have? They had one other game and I'm losing it. Oh, Draftosaurus, I think was Ankama as well.
Yep.
So Tales of Glory, great tile drafting, lay tiles down, score victory points, lightweight.
Yeah.
Fun. And Doppelt So Clever. You know, I like Roland
Wrights.
Yeah,
Doppelt So Clever.
There's been a bunch of them that I like. I just, that one is really cool. And the last thing I'm going to say, because this might be my second favorite game of the year, but I haven't played it in its full version because it's incredibly in-depth. I'm going to call this the pirate version of Gloomhaven.
Okay.
But Skull Tales Full Sail. Okay.
Sails?
I know.
Skull Tales Full Sail.
Yeah. But I played the adventure mode. Was amazing. It gave me that... Gloomhaven-esque feel, as well as Seventh Continent, right? Because we're exploring tiles. Some tiles left the board and came back later on after fighting some redcoats and doing some stuff. What I didn't get to do yet in the second mission is there's a sailing mode where you have a separate map, where you have a pirate ship, and literally one player is the captain, and you're assigning roles to the rest of the players, and you're actually running the pirate ship and dealing with issues. And the neat part is it's a cooperative game, but everyone's vying for captaincy. There's ways and circumstances where people can call for a mutiny.
Nice.
And overthrow the captain. and it's just, I mean, and the rules were thick. I mean, I think I showed you the rule book. They were thick. So this is one that Brant's going to need to learn and teach. But I think we're going to sit down and enjoy playing this like five, six, seven times.
It would be great to set aside a day.
But I have a feeling this is going to reach... near the top for me for this year, but we'll see what comes
out. It looks great. I'm excited to play it, which I think I threw you for a loop, because I think you thought I just kind of casually glanced at it and I was done. I've been thinking, but it's just not one of those games that I want to sit down when we have 2 hours and a bunch of people walking in and out. Like, right. I want to be in your house, at your table, with the rule book open, and we play through for 6 hours and see what we
can do. And that's what I want to do with it. So I'm looking...
It's the same thing with Gloomhaven. Gloomhaven works much better when you have that, like, head space, table space, time space to do all that. So it'd be cool. Awesome. So, yeah, 2019 has just been awesome. And these are great, great games that, you know, people should look forward to and keep playing. And I'm super excited for the games. I think I have a list of 68 games plus one extra entry, which is for the Gloomhaven pins that they're going to be selling at the Cephalofair booth, that I think might be the first time you're going to watch me, like, pay for bling. I think that's going to be a cool thing. Depends on how much the set costs, because there's 17 characters. So if it's a set of 17 pins, I'm not doing that. I'm not spending $170 on pins. But I'll pick one or two, maybe the starting characters that Kathy and I had, and bring those home to her. She doesn't know that yet, so I think that'll be cool. But yeah, I got 68 games to look at Gen Con, and I'm sure there's 50 games that we don't even know about. Yeah, but I'll save it all for the car ride. Yeah, why would I tell you now?
Right, and I can't wait. I mean, I'm excited for Gen Con, and I don't know if you're aware of this yet, but we are planning, and this is a first, we're planning like an after Gen Con event at the store, where we're going to bring Gen Con to everyone who couldn't go and try to get as many games as we can back that aren't released yet, and kind of do our own little mini, hey, come on down, learn the new game, check them out before the release. So these next 2 weeks are really exciting in game. Like, these might be the best 2 weeks in game.
Yes. Awesome. That is episode 132. This drink, I like it. Another. There it is. Thank you so much, Larry, for joining me for this episode. And we'll see you on the next episode.
What, the next episode, do you have a Marvel quote yet for it?
No, it's always just Gen Con 2019.
Oh, okay, because I just got to give a Hulk one.
Okay, well, we'll get one for sure. Awesome. Until next time, though, thank you for listening. I'm your host, The Brand.
Yes, speaker Larry Plano.
Yes. Keynote address. Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for listening.